obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Betty Ann Z from West Hills.
Oh, my God. When you get old, you know, your GI tract or whatever. I don't know what the hell it is. But anyway, glad the bathrooms are close. You just go to any lengths. Hi, my name is Betty Ann Zetz, and I'm a grateful member of the Tradition 5 group in Woodland Hills, California.
Hi, Betty.
Hi, everybody. Good evening, everybody. Well, let me tell you something. The sincere ones are here. And, of course, all the old-timers that are so old that they have to be to bed early, Bernie just told me. Because, oh, my God, I'm staying up past my bedtime. Anyway, I just want to welcome you to the convention. And Orange County is, they gave me oranges in my room. And Robin, my guest, ate them. And she goes, well, I have to eat 4 fruits a day. So she's eating all the fruit. And... But I just want to thank you, Wendy. I want to thank the committee for asking me to come and share and to be able to have this time with you on a Friday night. This is when my meeting starts. It starts at 7 o'clock. We have the newcomers meeting. And at 8 o'clock, we have the big meeting, which is about 130 people every Friday night. Tradition 5 group in Woodland Hills. And if you're ever in Woodland Hills or you're in the San Fernando Valley area, you know, not like these Orange County girls, and well, you have to go to any lengths to find a meeting here. But, you know, please call me up and come on over. We have free babysitting, Alateen and preteen, and we have sponsors for our preteen and Alateen meetings that are now called...
Amen.
Well, I know what they're called, but anyway. Our wonderful volunteers who are... Amiuses or whatever. Anyway, all it means is that they're certifiably insane to take over the Alateen. No. I love Alateen. Lois Wilson told us one time when we were at the Bill Wilson dinner in New York on Bill Wilson's birthday, she said to all the trustees when she got up to the podium and she was very tiny and had osteoporosis, and she said, just remember, she said to all the trustees and all the members of Alcoholics Anonymous, she said, remember that AA, Al-Anon, and Alateen are 3 fellowships within one. And it's one of the greatest gifts that she gave us, I think, is that the separation of AA and Al-Anon is not a dilution of our program, is that, you know, we have a different program. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous because it helped me to be able to force my husband to make a free decision. You know, either you get sober, I'm going to take you for everything you ever wanted or ever dreamed of in your life. And he kind of believed me because I was his 5th wife, I think, legally. I don't know. If you hear Bob's story, you know that Bob has been, he's the marrying guy like Alec Baldwin. You know, he marries women, but he marries them twice. So that's a problem. And, but he said he just never can get it right. And, but I forced him to make a free decision over 40 years ago. And, you know, I look at this room tonight, and I look at the people that I love here and that I know here. And for you that are new under 5 years, you know, stick around. You can be old like us. And but it's really a transition. It's a spiritual transition and transformation. You know, the program is Al-Anon and Ming transformed my life into something that Kelly talked about today. And I just remembered something about, is she here, Kelly, here? Of course not. Oh, there she is. But anyway, she spoke at AFG when she was a kid, many, many, many years ago. It was a good talk then, too. But anyway, but I really want to pass on to you my condolences with your mother. I'm a motherless daughter. You know, my mother was killed because of alcoholism, and when she was 9 months pregnant when I was 6 years old. And my mother was carrying twin boys, and it was a very tragic time in our life, and my father was an alcoholic, but my mother loved an alcoholic, and that's what we're doing here tonight. You know, just like with our Al-Anon Parent Focus meetings that we started up in Westlake Village on Monday nights, you know, we started out almost 8 years ago with our Al-Anon Focus Parent Meeting because alcoholism is a generational illness. you know, it's, you know, in the fourth generation now. And so our parents at that parent meeting, again, you know, is that, you know, we're put in a position again that it's a generational illness and alcoholism and addiction. And there's a lot of addiction in there. And World Service has given us a lot of flexibility and leeway in regards to the traditions, in regards to helping parents whose sons or daughters and then are dying from alcoholism or addiction. And so, you know, if you're ever in the Westlake area, whatever, please come to our Al-Anon Parent Focus meetings. I don't know how many parents are here tonight, but my life has been deeply affected not only by alcoholism and addiction, but it's also been affected by the fact is that, you know, I had to have a spiritual awakening, and I had to have a spiritual bottom thing to be able to get here. I had to be what they call an Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to be desperate. I had to be, you know, all those things that we say in our literature, which I love. And thank you for the people that are doing the literature here, Al-Anon literature. Thank you very much. You have a very nice literature table. I was going to rip off a few pieces, but I thought, you know, thought, nah, they'll catch me here. You know, those Al-Anons in Orange County, you know, they find you. But, you know, one of the things about the literature, which we love, and old-timers like Bernie and Alan, and people that are here tonight, you know what literature does for us. It's all written by us. For those of you that are under 5 years, you know, I always say this, you know, you guys know everything, right? No, you don't. But the literature is the staple of our fellowship and our program. It's not written from any outside sources. It's not written by psychologists or anyone else. It's written by us, except one piece, and I'm sure that some of you can guess which piece that is. No, you can't. Okay. Merry-go-round called denial. And, you know, again, it's our friends. You know, they always say, let our friends recommend us. And I'll tell you something, if it wasn't recommended to me, I wouldn't be standing here tonight. I want to thank my husband. My husband's very, very ill. And he's been ill for the last couple years, and it's been very difficult for him. He's on dialysis, and he's a sober, like I said, alcoholic, because I forced him to make that free decision. And, you know, tonight, I just got him out of the hospital last night, and people go, well, why are you here? You know, we didn't think you'd come, or whatever. And, you know, it's really interesting because of the fact is that my husband said to me, he said, no, you got to go because I want to go to that AA meeting. And he said, I want to go play cards tonight. Okay. And so my guest tonight is Robin, one of the women I sponsor who came up with me, the member of our Tradition 5 group. And I just want to tell you that we are being treated absolutely royally. I just need money for parking. But anyway... Jesus, I had to self-park. Tell you, it's too expensive anymore. But one of the things that the literature does for us, and especially when I came into the program on October 21st, 1974, I came broken. I came with all those new words now, you know. I came because I was absolutely desperate. I mean, I was desperate for some type of, you know, explanation what the hell was going on, because I loved this alcoholic. And this was my second marriage, you know. And my first marriage, and then my husband drank a lot, and he had, you know, a beer bar, you know, I again, you know, it's like who says it, Mary Pearl always says it, you know, we just have bad pickers, you know. But I didn't have a bad picker. I've never picked a bad alcoholic. Evil, but not bad, no. I love alcoholics, you know, I love addicts. But, you know, going back to that, you know, that desperation that I had, you know, I've always had that desperation. I had it the night after my mother was killed and you know, by that train that hit her and her rushing home to make dinner for me. And many years later, through my steps, I found out through my sponsor, my father, and through my twin aunts, because I lost my twin brothers. But what I found out, and then from my twin aunts, and then years later, and then when I was going to my family and finding my family, my mother's family in Phoenix, I can remember my twin aunt Marie, she brought out these letters that my mother had written to my father when he was overseas. My father really was a hero. He was served in World War II, Korea War, you know, Vietnam twice. You know, my father really was a hero. But when he took the drink took him, and it absolutely caused absolute wreckage in our life. And that's why I love our literature, because it talks about the wreckage of our lives. And I can recall, you know, my father's drinking after that my mother was killed. And I can recall, and then the fact is that, you know, I was powerless over it. And I never knew that until I got with you. I never realized, and then the spiritual aspect of the program, of the powerlessness that I felt, and the unmanageability of my own life, and then because of alcoholism, because I was affected by alcoholism. I can remember my father's drinking, and then almost a year went by, and my father remarried again. But going back to my aunts, when I was in Phoenix and I was visiting with my aunts, and we were reminiscing, she brought out these letters that my mother had written to my father when he was overseas. And all these letters were love letters. They really were love letters. My mother loved an alcoholic, you know. And she died because of alcoholism. And I can remember telling my aunts how resentful I was. And you know, I was sharing with them that I was so angry at my father and for all the things that he did when he was drinking to us, myself, and my five half-sisters and brothers. And my aunts were just absolutely dumbfounded. They said, "We loved your father." My father was a hillbilly singer. Now they call them country western singers, you know. All my family came from Kentucky up to northern Wisconsin and homesteaded all that land up there, you know. And I'll tell you something. All my aunts and uncles played, you know, different instruments and guitars. We all got together. We all went to my grandmother's house from Chicago. I was born in Chicago. And my father was stationed at Des Plaines. Yeah, Ellen. Yeah. Thank God I didn't run into her. Oh, Jesus. Pat and Bob had been in deep trouble. Well, we know Pat's in trouble. But anyway. But, you know, we used to always go to my grandmother's house for all the holidays, like Easter. Man, everybody went up to north, you know, because my parents, and they supported their parents, you know. Everybody took care of the older folks. My grandmother didn't even have a toilet in her house, even after she died. We had an outhouse, you know, or she had the Sears catalog and a pot, you know. All these young people are going, "What?" You know, we were poor. And Sears catalog, and now it's online. But I don't know how he fixed that tonight. But you know, but there was a lot of good memories, and the memories were, I think, what my sponsor Shirley always told me: those memories that you have of all the good times with the alcoholism and with your families and all those type things, those are the ones in them that keep us in good stead when we go into our 11th step. It keeps us into, you know, the prayer and prayer and meditation. That's what brings us into that safe place for us in regards to the family. And but anyway, my aunts were just mortified that I had so much resentment and anger toward my father. And they said, "Oh, your father, you know, we all loved you very, very much. But we knew that, you know, that your father and my uncle, who died of alcoholism when he was 48 years old and he weighed 87 pounds and had an extended liver, and left three of my cousins. Nobody in my family is in the program, except today my daughter is in the program. She's been in the program 35 years. She counts her time in Alateen and also her time in Al-Anon. And plus, she's married to a sober alcoholic who's got 36 years. And so, you know, the grace goes on with the program. The grace really does, you know, transfer to our families. I wish it'd come sooner. But anyway, but my aunts really opened up my eyes. And that's what the steps do and the traditions do with our families. And then it opens up our eyes to be able to see the truth. And it's the truth that, you know, that they talk about in AA in the fifth chapter. They talk about, and that's all we had at the time, and that's all the literature that we had when I came in, is to learn about alcoholism, was to read the book. I do that on my personal use outside of the program. I don't do it inside the program. But, you know, what it helped me was that the truth that we tell ourselves. I had to tell something about this story about my father, who I loved so much, and about this hero, kind of hero of my life, you think, to ward off the terrible pain that I was going through and the terrible, you know, situations that I was going to and circumstances that led to that fourth and that led to that fifth step. Anyway, they said, oh my God, your mother loved you. She wasn't rushing home that work that night. She was, what happened is that they had a baby shower for her and she was 9 months pregnant with these twin boys. And that time they didn't have any of those, you know, sonograms and all this kind of stuff. She goes, oh no. She goes, your mother was rushing home so you wouldn't be home alone. It had nothing to do with your father and his drinking. Because, see, the night before he went out drinking. You know, so that's where my powerlessness came in. That's where, you know, the lie to myself for many years in the program. I lied to myself, you know, to make an excuse, you know, for the behavior that not only my father did, but that I did, you know. It caused me a lot of angst for a number of years, even in the program. So what happened to me is that when I first... when I first came out to California, my father remarried again, and I have five sisters, half sisters and brothers, and my brother just died a number of years ago from alcoholism, died in his sleep. And my other brother, you know, and my sisters are affected by the disease of alcoholism too, but they don't choose anything to have a program of recovery. And, you know, that's what the attraction of the program is for us. That's where our 12-step work comes in. Because I have to act better than I feel, especially with my family. Because when I first came into the program, I really tried to, you know, give them literature. I can remember giving my stepmother literature, and then who had really suffered from the disease of un-Al-Anonism and alcoholism. And I can remember giving her literature, and I think a couple months later, I came down from Reno, and I said, hey, Mom, did you read the literature, how did you like the literature in Al-Anon? She goes, oh, I burned that. That's not for me. And that's when I learned about denial. And that's when I learned about the love of an alcoholic. You know, we can't change anyone. We can't change their perspective. They have to reach that for themselves. And I really learned that through my own family and through my own children and through my daughter who's an addict. What happened for me is that, you know, when I was living in Sacramento, my father was overseas, and I took off and I went to, I met a guy and my first husband, and we went to Reno. He was from Reno. We went back to Reno. I was working for an ad agency there, and he wanted to get married, and I thought I should get married too, and, you know, and we got married, and, you know, then I thought about it as I was crying walking down the aisle. And my father just got back from Vietnam and walked me down the aisle. But my father said something very prolific to me. Well, not prolific, but anyway, he said something to me in the auntie room before you walked down the aisle, you know. He said, Betty Ann, you can always change your mind. You do have a choice. You don't have to really do this. Because I think my father, as an alcoholic, knew that the pain and suffering that I had gone through. And, you know, with my father's alcoholism. And he said, we can always walk out. And, you know, it's really funny because in Al-Anon, they tell you, we have a choice. We have a choice to be miserable just for today. You know, we can choose to be happy. You know, all those little, you know, all those little slogans, all those things that we have in Al-Anon, all those spiritual, you know, gut-wrenching things that we can use and then to protect ourselves and then from the disease of alcoholism is really absolutely, you know, fulfilling for us, you know, to be able to reach that part in our life where we can have some serenity with this. And tonight, Robin and I did that. We went up to the room, we laid down, I tried to rest a little bit, and, you know, we were in a dark room, and I came back again, because I don't have a pitch, you know, I don't have a real talk, I just kind of like talk and share about that. But I went back again about... And Kelly talked about it today. She talked about, you know, the miracles of the program, you know. But, you know, I also talk about, you know, the devastation, you know, that happened to us and then as we came into the program and why we got into the program. It's really not only a gift to us, but it's like that little saying I have that I wrote down at my first or second meeting in Reno, and it says, we the unwilling, led by the unqualified, have been doing so little with so long, we try to attempt the impossible with nothing. And that's so true. I was trying to attempt everything I could do, and especially in the third step, trying to force my will all through, you know, alcoholism, all through my marriage, with my children, you know, everything that I could do to force my will onto that until I got to be with you. And I got to look at that third step, you know, free will, self-will, God's will. How do you turn that over? How do you turn over that insanity, that insane thinking? You know, what comes to us in the middle of the night? It's called the phone. That's all we had. We just had a phone. You know, we didn't have cell phones or, you know, we had coin machines, you know, the telephones. I think I saw one last weekend in Sedona. And I went, oh, my God, that's a real phone booth. But that's what saved my life was the phone. That's why I'm so grateful for all of you that are on the phone line, on the hotline, you know, the help line, whatever, the 12-step line. You know, that's absolutely a gift, you know, that somebody picks up the phone. It's not a recorded message. Press 1 if he's beating the hell out of you. Press 2 if, you know, if you're running away. Press 3 if you need, you know. I'll tell you, that's what saves our life is the phone. And Ann Bingham used to say that, the co-founder of Al-Anon with Lois. And then she's the one that wrote the first piece of literature. She typed up Lois's story in the first little piece of literature that they had. And again, literature comes in, you know, to really save my life. But I got married to this guy. We moved from Reno. I was living in Reno at the time. I sold this property that I had, and we moved to Seattle, and that was going to be okay, and it was going to be wonderful. And, you know, I had two daughters at the time, and I became into, I got into the entertainment business, and I was doing pretty good. But you know what? My marriage wasn't doing really good. I was watching his drinking. I was, you know, watching all the guys come over, play cards, you know, have the beer bar and all this. It wasn't his drinking that bothered me. It was me. I was bothered by his drinking. That's why our tradition says that. You know, our tradition says if we're somebody, you know, lives are affected by alcoholism, we're in the right place. We're always in the right place in Al-Anon. I have a lot of AAs say that, and they said to me last weekend when I was up in Sedona, they said, you know, geez, you know, we're dual members or we're double winners. And I said, now you're a bunch of double losers. Let me tell you, when you know, we put all these labels on people. And I said, no, when you walk into an Al-Anon room, you're a member of Al-Anon. You sit in the seat. You're a member of Al-Anon. We don't put labels on you. I don't care if you're a member of OA, pick your nose, AA, whatever. You know, when you're here with us, you're an Al-Anon member. I mean, you just don't come to the meeting to pick up on me. I'll tell you that for sure. But anyway, you know, you come on because your life's unmanageable. Something's going on in your relationship with your kids or with, you know, your family, whatever. You know, I'm not even an adult child of an alcoholic. Don't label me that. I was a child that, you know, came through alcoholism. I survived alcoholism. You know, we're all survivors, they say, in a way. But, and I don't wear pink, and except today I wore pink. But Al-Anon gave me the gift of when I was in Seattle, to walk through that pain because I was avoiding pain. I was avoiding, you know, anything that was going on with me. I was absolutely like a tornado going through their lives. That's what they say in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why you and I can identify with that. We can identify when we go to open AA meetings. I hear those stories, and I hear those young people that come to our parent meeting, you know, and they share at our parent meeting about their parents. Oy, oy, oy. But anyway, they say nothing could have stopped our addiction or alcoholism, you know. Only God could and would have sought. And I got to believe that. I got to believe that I finally found a higher power that led me to be with you, because it was absolutely terrible. And I can remember I was very successful in this business. I just had another baby when I was separated from my first husband. And all of a sudden I decided to go back to Reno, and a week before Christmas. And these are the amends that, you know, I had to make to my adult children now. You know, for years, my children held me hostage with guilt, you know, and Al-Anon gave me the self-worth and the self-esteem and the self to be able to get through that and to be able to be my own person. I can remember one time I told Sally, my sponsor, my late sponsor also, I remember Sally, I said, I'm going to change my name from Betty Ann And she goes, what the hell are you going to call yourself? I said, Michelle Dubré, you know, because I'm French-Canadian anyway. And, you know, everything was unreality, you know. I lived in this, you know, the Truman Show, you know. I swear to goodness. But, and she goes, well, then nobody will know who you are because Betty Ann's kind of a unique name. And I went, oh, okay. See, my little bit of ego got in there. You know, my sponsor always told me about ego, is edging got out. But there is good ego, too. And that's the grace of good ego, is that somebody cares for me, cares for my husband, cares for my family, that you're my advocates through this last 40 years, and you're still my advocates. But anyway, I left that marriage, and I left in the middle of the night. I went back to Reno a week before Christmas, and I can remember my girls saying to me, Mom, Mom, why are we leaving the school? We have the Christmas party. I was PTA president. You know, I don't know how I did that, but I did that. Al-Anons do really crazy, insane things. But anyway, what I did is I became PTA president, and I got this, you know, obsession. I can remember one time we were in New Orleans speaking on a panel, and they were talking about obsession with the alcoholic and thing. And after I shared anything, this lady of color came over to me who was on the panel with me. I loved her, Rosie. She came over to me and she goes, honey, you weren't obsessed, you were possessed. In that new, you know, that southern accent. You were possessed, you know, and absolutely possessed. I was possessed in thing with the fact is that I need to get away. I need to leave. I took geographics and I was sober doing that kind of stuff. I was insane, really. And I can remember calling up this girl in Reno, and I can tell you about the, you know, the 9-step and the 12-step calls and things like this that happened to me, you know, because I can remember taking my kids, you know, out of school, and I, as PTA president, I just had commissioned this big, huge totem pole by Johnson, this famous totem pole maker, whatever, you know, and I spent that money, $2,500 at the time. Well, now it's worth like $25,000, but anyway, I, you want to justify your bad actions, you know. But anyway, I'd taken the PTA money, paid this guy, and they said, well, the totem pole is going to be, you know, you commissioned this totem pole, and we got to see the totem pole thing. It didn't matter. I was self-will run riot. And what I did is I packed those kids up in the car. I took the cat. Don't ever travel with a cat. And never had a cat since. And but I, you know, I took off in the middle of the night because I was terrorized. I was terrorized by myself, terrorized in the fourth step that it talks about fear. Fear. Everything was based on fear, false evidence appearing real. It was real. This fear was so real. And I was so ashamed. I was so, you know, trying to be interdependent. That's what Al-Anon gives us, interdependency, not dependency upon another person. And it says that in our One Day at a Time book. We cannot depend upon another person for our happiness. We cannot depend upon them for our financial, our, you know, physical compatibility. You know, we especially can't depend upon them for our spiritual life. And that is so true. But anyway, I took these three little girls. I put them in the car and I took the cat, put them in my clown wagon, and off we went back to Reno. You know, and it was snowing. I went over the hill. I got into Redding, and let me tell you something. And just by God's grace, I can remember having a flat tire about 5 o'clock in the morning. I pulled into this gas station off the Highway 5, and the kids went to the bathroom, and these two guys were drinking beer at 6 o'clock in the morning, something like that. And you know, that intuition, that feeling in your stomach, you know. And so what I did is that they changed the tire and I got the kids in the car and I was living with fear, you know. I remember throwing them in the car and, you know, I had also a stick. I picked up a stick just in case they started acting out, you know. You take the stick. It's a lot of, you know, now they call it abuse. But anyway, I called it frustration. And, you know, I even tried to drug Amby, who is now 47 years old. I tried to drug her. I went to the pharmacist and said, is there something you can give her, you know, to make her sleep on this trip? And she was little, and he said, well, I'll give her some phenobarbital or something like that. They didn't know anything at the time. But it did the opposite to her. She was like climbing the walls, you know. She was up for 24 hours, you know. But anyway, I got the kids in the car driving down the freeway, you know, I was leaving. I'd taken a geographic, you know. left everything behind, left a lot of wreckage behind. And we got about, I don't know, maybe 5 miles away, and I was going 100 miles an hour or whatever, and the cat was jumping all over the place. And finally, Kimberly goes, "Mom, Mom, Mom." I said, "What? What is that, Kimberly?" She goes, "Mom, you have to go back." I said, "Why?" She goes, "Because Deanna's not here. My daughter Deanna, you know." And I said, "What? You're kidding me." And I can remember going through the divide, didn't wait for an off-ramp, you know, going through the divide, rushing back there, and the gas station was closed, and there's no Deanna. And some of you probably know that sinking, horrible feeling, you know, and it's that, oh, my God, I left my kid here, and they took her, whatever. And so finally, Kimberly had some rationale, and she said, I think she locked herself in the bathroom. And that's what my daughter did. She locked herself in that bathroom. And, you know, it took me many years to make amends to that girl. And she locked herself in there because she knew I was crazy. She knew I was insane. I was the one that was acting out, not my husband. You know, he was devastated by the fact that I took my three little girls and left, you know, left Seattle. And that's what amends are for. Amends are for that. And so... we finally persuaded her to come out of the door, and I did that, you know, Al-Anon thing, you know, come out of the door, you know, trying to persuade her to come out, and she came out, and then I, you know, admonished her for that. How dare you do that? And it took many years, and it took a trip, and then going up to Oregon, going back to, from, Deanna was in college at the University of Washington, and my husband bought her a little Volkswagen, and we were driving up the Oregon coast, and we got out of the coast, and you know, there, my sponsor always said there's always a time for amends, and that amends was that day, that night at dusk, and we were looking out over the ocean. And I just held Deanna's hand, and I said, "Deanna, I just really want to make amends to you, Ming, for..." And, you know, it's so interesting because my daughter turned around and looked at me, and she goes, "Mom, you're a great mom. You're crazy, but you're really great, you know, you're a great mom." And, you know, over the years and thing, I've tried to restore my relationship, and, you know, and that's what Al-Anon gives us. It gives us the opportunity through the ninth step and the eighth step and the eighth to restore our relationships with not only our family comes first. And, you know, but I've been able to restore all my relationships and thing with all my children. I have 5 children. I don't know why. And, but anyway... But I got back to Reno, and you know, I went through my parents' house, and you know, it was a horrible situation. And so I got into Reno at night, and it was snowing, and I went to this friend's house. And this is another thing that the program has given us, is the 12th step, and then to be able to be of service and to help others. And I had expectations, you know, and expectations lead to resentment. And I can remember this friend of mine, I got her a really good job in Reno, and she said I could come stay with her, you know, for a couple weeks until I can get on my feet in Reno and get a job and all this. And we got to the door, and it was Christmas, you know, week before Christmas, and the Christmas tree, she opened up the door. I could smell the apple cider and see the Christmas tree, and my kids could too. And so I said, "Sarah, we're here." And she said, "Oh, okay." Never invited us in. And, you know, that was a lesson of being humiliated. And she goes, "You could be out there in the garage. You know, I have a mattress out there in the garage and a hot plate for you and the girls."
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
And that's why our home is always open. Our home is always open to alcoholics and Al-Anons and Al-Ateens. You know, that's why, you know, it says outside of the program that we get interested in volunteerism and outside issues, not outside issues, but, you know, that night when I was humiliated with my little girls standing there, you know, the lesson that I learned from that thing is that, you know, God always invites us in. You know, we're the ones in the thing that don't open the door. And I can remember opening up that door of that garage, and it was freezing cold in Reno and snowing. And I can remember again what Al-Anons do. Oh, this is going to be an adventure. This is going to be okay. We're going to be okay. And, you know, many years later, we are okay. We are okay. But, you know, just doing okay is not good enough in the program. Bill Wilson said that. You know, he said, just doing good is the enemy of the best. And that's what you give me. You give me the best of me through you and through the steps and through the traditions for my family. But anyway, we went through that situation and then in those circumstances with staying there. And then we finally were able to get a little apartment and all that. And, you know, I lost those kids. I lost those kids because I lost them because I was so obsessed, not only with, you know, with fear and fear that I was going on, that I took my kids back to live with my ex-husband because he remarried right away. But down the road, you know, in regards to that, is that I was able to not only make amends to my ex's wife, and my husband calls her something else. But anyway, but over the years, because of the attraction of the program, because of the, you know, of being sane, and in step two it talks about insanity, you know, and sanity, sane thinking means in the dictionary, if you look it up in the dictionary, it means to be restored to sane thinking. And my thinking was completely off. Bruce just showed me a little bracelet that the Alateens are doing for SCAT, and it says think, you know, on there. Thank you very much for that, Bruce. You didn't give it to me. But anyway, too much. You know, again, you know, it puts me in a situation of being able to not only make amends to, you know, to my girls, but to my family, but, you know, to be humiliated enough to take my children back. And so that they had a good life with my ex-husband for a year until I met Bob. And when I met Bob, I think I met him in a bar, and I did the same thing again. You know, I met him in a bar. I just, you know, we just tore through people's life like a tornado tearing through people's lives. And then all of a sudden, you know, it happened for me because my husband was just getting out of a marriage and then with his second wife the second time. And, you know, I can remember telling Shirley, my first sponsor, my late sponsor, I said, Shirley, I just can't do that, you know, moral inventory. And she goes, Betty Ann, knowing your story, why don't you do an immoral inventory? All righty. And, but that's the grace of the program. That's the grace of the fellowship, you know. Even the person next to you could save your life tonight, you know, if you reach out for someone, you know, that's the sanity of the first three steps thing that we talked about today. But anyway, I again, you know, I can remember coming back with my clown partner, and we were coming back from Reno, and I was just so devastated about that. And so when I met Bob, and then, you know, again, I wanted to fix it. I wanted to, you know, be normal. And I can remember Sally telling me, the only thing normal, Betty Ann, is the knob on the dishwasher. And that's true. We always want to be normal. We want things to look normal for us. So what I did is that I got into working for my husband, and his drinking was just being horrendous. And finally, I was just absolutely in such turmoil with Bob's drinking and his kids drinking and, you know, all this, that I finally got to that point thing of desperation, you know. I finally reached out and I called upon a God of my not understanding. You know, I had no God in my life. I had no spirit in my life left, you know, except for my mother-in-law, who I really loved in a very special way. And, you know, she was really the emphasis. People are put into your life, and then I think for a reason during the last, you know, throes of alcoholism and addiction. But anyway, my mother-in-law came to work for us, and she really tried to do the three M's, like mother, manager, martyr. And, you know, our lives were so unmanageable. My husband's drinking was so unmanageable. My girls were up in Seattle, and my father, and all that kind of stuff, which the steps will heal you with. And so what happened with that is that that came that night, you know, and Bob didn't come home all night. And I had talked to my brother-in-law in San Diego, and God bless his soul, he just passed a couple weeks ago, and he was our Eskimo to come into the program. And I remember calling him and telling him, I just can't do this anymore with your brother. I his drinking is just completely out of control. We're losing everything or whatever. And I can remember my brother-in-law saying to me, he says, Betty Ann, you need Al-Anon. He said, I know my brother needs Alcoholics Anonymous, but you really need Al-Anon. And you're sicker than he is, you know. And that's out of desperation, you know, that one night that he came home in Whittlesey cab. And, you know, I can remember, you know, again, him coming home in Whittlesey cab and resenting Whittlesey cab. You know, and plus I used to call Whittlesey cab all the time, all night long. Where do you got them? I know you have them. Where are you? They do drive-bys now. No, I went out and found them. Thank God I didn't live in L.A. And, you know, and when I had to make amends to Whittlesey cab on my amends list, you know, I told my sponsor, I said, why do I have to make amends to Whittlesey cab? She goes, because you disrupted their business. You did all, you know, you were horrible to them. You always, you know, calling them all the time, disrupting their business, you know, threatening them, you know, don't you dare come into our restaurant, you know, whatever. And so she wouldn't let me come into the convention in the meeting. She said, see all those Whittlesey cab phones, you know, on the wall at the convention center in Reno? And I went, yeah. She goes, pick it up and call and make amends. I said, well, that dispatcher won't be there. It's been a couple years. And she goes, they were on the list. I said, okay, don't come in the meeting until you do that. And Kelly talked about that tonight, too. She was threatened by her sponsor, too. Nowadays, they don't care. But anyway, so, you know, I really wanted to please her. I really wanted to be part of, you know, of this life that we have here. And that's what I did. I finally picked up that phone, and I said, hi, this is Betty Ann Zetz. And he said, oh, Betty Ann Zetz. I said, well, you won't remember me. He goes, oh, yeah, we do. You know. I said, well, I belong to a program that I'm making amends. You know, I'm really, you know, I'm sorry I disrupted your business and all this. He goes, oh, my God, Betty Ann. He said, we used to love when you called. We used to lay bets whether you'd find Bob or not. I won a lot of money off of you. You know, this is all the good stuff before, you know. And so, and then my sponsor told me that day when I did that, I felt so good, at, you know, that I finally did something. And then, but he said something about the alcoholic that touched my life that night. Because Bob used to drive Whittlesey cab when he was drinking when he first moved to Reno. And he said, you know what? He said, this is really interesting, Betty Ann. He said, Bob came in the other night with one of the guys from AA. He brought another guy that just got his, you know, he helped pay for his, to get his license back. I said, really, how much was it? He goes, $50. You know, Bob didn't tell me about it. Just for today, we'll do something for somebody else and not get found out. Those just for today's saved my life. Those slogans saved my life when I first came into the program. Because there was the other night, you know, that the guard across the street from the house and then would guard Harold Smith's wife's house, and I'd be, you know, angry on the phone calling, and Bob would come home with Whittlesey cab, and I'd push him off the porch, cover him up with the leaves in the middle of the night, and, you know, put a cigar in his mouth and go, burn, baby, burn. It was the 70s. What the hell? And so this night, this guard came over because I wore my Fredericks of Hollywood outfit. You know, you wear that Fredericks of Hollywood outfit, you want sexy enough, pretty enough, clever enough, and we ratted our hair then. You know, we wore eyelashes and wore makeup. You just keep putting on makeup, you know, all the time, so you're prepared. And I had those Fredericks of Hollywood slippers, you know, that have the pom-poms on it. And for my 20th Al-Anon birthday, I guess Nordstrom's was selling them. They gave them to me. I couldn't even wear them now. But anyway, I was, you know, and I had that, you know, Loretta Young robe that goes over it with feathers, you know. It wasn't an animal. I don't know what it was, but anyway. And I used to smoke with a French cigarette holder. I thought that looked pretty good. I did a lot of things in the middle of the night, you know. And I had a lot of plans, you know. And but that night, you know, Bob came home with the Whittlesey cab about 5 o'clock in the morning. I pushed him off the porch, covered him up with the leaves, which, you know, I raked. And he didn't, you know, because we always want the alcoholic to do something, you know, for us. Take out the garbage. I'd be a dump, garbage dump, if I ever depended upon Bob or the alcoholic. But anyway, all of a sudden there's a knock on the door, and this security guard that sat in a car on the graveyard shift, and then came to the door. I opened up the door, my Fringe of Hollywood outfit on, you know, and you could see through with the, anyway. But anyway, I looked pretty good then. But he said to me, excuse me, but there's somebody on your lawn. And I'm like, arrogant, smug, and self-righteous. What the hell are you doing over here? Get off my property. He's fine. He had enough VO and Tanqueray in him. He was fine. But anyway, you know, I just admonished him and told him, go back in your little car and, you know, with your little gun. And so we're in Reno that weekend, and my sponsor says, you need to call John, that guy from, how do the sponsors remember that crap? I tell you, you know. And so I did, you know. She says, call the, I already had this success with Whittlesey. I'm so happy, right? So I said, well, he won't be there either. She goes, it doesn't matter. Just call, make amends. You know, you disrupted his life all the time. And so anyway, I called the dispatcher at the security company, and I said, hi, it's Betty Ann Setz. Is John work there still? And he goes, yeah, he's just coming in. I went, really? Okay. So John comes in, gets on the phone, and I say, John, I'm really sorry. I lived on Patrick Avenue, and you saw everything going on, and then, you know, and I'm making amends to him, and he starts laughing, you know. He goes, Betty Ann, I used to beg for the graveyard shift. Nothing happened except at your house. He said, is Bob alive? I said, he's in Alcoholics Anonymous. He goes, thank God, you know, I'm in Al-Anon. Thank God you're in that Al-Anon thing. Can you talk to my wife? See, that's the spiritual aspect of the steps. I don't want to go on really longer because I told you my story of the last 50 minutes, you know, whatever. So I'm going to just spend another 15 minutes telling you what it's like now. No. You know that when we were in the program, Bob and I had my three girls, and then we had our son, JR, who now is in Michigan. In fact, I just talked to him yesterday. He's married to an alcoholic addict and who has now been sober because we kind of forced her to make a free decision the last 2 years. And he's doing very well. He was raised in Alateen and Al-Anon. You know, the gift of that is that, you know, my son knew where to go. He knew where to go for help. And it wasn't jail all the time, you know. And my son's doing good now. My son's doing really good. He gave up a great position, you know, as a snowboarder in Jackson Hole and married this lady. And I have a little grandson that called me yesterday. And these are the gifts that we get from the program. Hi, this is my 10-year-old grandson called me yesterday, and they were in the car. They were picked up from school, and it was their last day at school for Easter vacation in Michigan. And he said it was snowing the day before, now it was raining. And he says, Grammy, he said, thank you so much for my Easter card and my $5. And I said, you're welcome. You know, because those memories of my grandparents, you know, my grandmother doing little things like that, you know, just putting a dollar in the card or sending a card. And that's one thing I learned in Al-Anon. You know, we send cards, you know, we write thank you notes. You know, we do all those things today and that, you know, will keep absolutely the generation of Al-Anon to be able to be self-healing and to heal those relationships and those things. And then my little 8-year-old granddaughter sitting in the back seat of the car, you know, she said, oh, Grammy, I love my Easter bunny. I took that $5 and I spent it all. Oh, boy, I'm going to save her a seat. And but anyway, I said to her, I said, Sydney, when you get the money, you should take half of it and spend it, do it, and then put the other half in the bank, you know, in your little piggy bank. She goes, I have a piggy bank that's furry. I went, okay. See, that's the gift that my grandchildren are able to be with their grandmother and their grandparents. They said they want to come out to California during the winter. They're tired of the Michigan winters. And like I said, my oldest granddaughter is my Ambie, the one that, you know, that my middle daughter, she just turned 47, and I have a biracial granddaughter, and that doesn't make any difference in Al-Anon and Alcoholics Anonymous. And they, you know, the light of my life, and my daughter is a comedian, and my granddaughter just had, 5 years ago, my little great-granddaughter is going to celebrate, you know, her fifth birthday, and they asked me if they can use my house, and then so they could put a petting zoo in my house. And I said, outside? Yes. Yeah, they're going to do outside. They're the ones that are watching my husband tonight, taking care of my husband tonight with those AA guys and things that are taking him to the meeting. And so those are the gifts that we have. And then, you know, my son I told you about. My daughter, Deanna, the one I left in the gas station, you know, today she's high management in the gas company here in Southern California, and she won't pay my gas bill. And... you know, and she just, over the years, has invited me to go with her on trips. She just got back from Washington, D.C., and she wanted me to go on it. My husband became very ill, though, and we had to cancel, and I wasn't able to go to Washington, D.C. to see my husband's grandson, who is now a secret guy in the State Department, and he's in Yemen. So pray for him, please. And, you know, and I have he's married to a great Brazilian girl, and they just had a baby a year ago, and they live in Washington, D.C. now. And I was able to have him when he came out of Afghanistan as a captain in the Marines. My husband and I opened up our home to him, and I'm raising my grandson, who is 17 years old, and I had to take him away from my daughter Amy, those twins that were born after the program. I was 3 months in the program when I had twin girls, and I mean, not 3 months in the program, but my other twin died. She died of SIDS, and she died of crib death, and then at 3 months. And the first person I called was a lady in Al-Anon, Dottie Dickens, and I said, "Can you please help me?" And I said, "You know, my baby just died." And she said, "We'll be right there. I'm not able to go to the district meeting tomorrow night, because my baby just died." I was in shock. She goes, "We'll be right there. Don't worry about the district meeting." And that's the gifts of Al-Anon. You know, they always say this little thing about, you know, that our relatives are our relatives, our parents and all that, and then this is our family, because it's the Al-Anon family groups. And you've walked me through so much. You've walked us through so much. And you walked us through that emergency cesarean when I had those twins 2 months early. You walked us through the loss of our business, you know. And then you've also walked us through the loss of our grandson that's in the State Department, his brother, when we were in Croatia 7 years ago, that died of 23 years old of an overdose. My husband's other daughter, his daughter Kimberly, she lost her son Ming to an overdose. You know, we've lost two grandchildren. And so my sponsor told me, everybody that's been taken away from you in your life, Ming, will be replaced. And they have been. They have been. The men in my life, like Bruce here and Kip here, these men in my life are my brothers. These are the people that represent, you know, a God-like, you know, brothership for me, you know, to me to see what men are really like and what brothers are really like, you know. Again, you know, everybody that's my mother who was taken away, her name was Clara. And a number of years ago, I sponsored a lady who would have been the same age as my mother, and she was 65 years old, and her name was Clara. That's a miracle of the program. The miracle of the program that it will be replaced. Again, what happened to us also is that Amy one night came in, and I knew that she was loaded, and but our sponsors, Keith and Sally, told us, "Let us take care of her, of Amy, not you. You have to detach. You have to let go. You have to, you know," and this is before we had the Al-Anon parent focus meetings. We're in the program 22 years. We thought that we'd be excluded from this, from alcoholism in our kids and addiction. And, you know, there was that night, too. That night, you know, that we get a call from the jail, you know, and I answered that first, you know, call, that collect call from an inmate. And I can remember my daughter saying, "Mommy, Mommy, please help me." And, you know, I had to say to my daughter, I love you so much, and I trust that you know where to figure this out, Amy. You know who to call. And, you know, it's been a journey with her. It's been a journey because of the fact is that when she was sober, she got pregnant with my grandson, Cole, who I'm raising. It was one of those nights, you know, when he was 9 months old, and she was sober, and she was then, you know, getting on her feet and working for my daughter, my other daughter, my daughter-in-law, and then that was that night. And, you know, I babysat Cole, you know, she didn't come home, and I knew I had to take some actions, and I did. I had to take some actions, and I had to get guardianship of this grandchild, and you know, I had to make those decisions, made a decision, and that's what the program gave me. I talked to all of you. I reasoned things out. I, you know, took direction from my sponsor, you know. And then there was when I took him, you know. And then you get another call, in the middle of the night, and Amy's saying, Mommy, please help me. And, you know, and I said, I trust, you know, you've got to figure this out, Amy. You know who to call in AA. Because that's the only choice that she has, really, is AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the only point of recovery for her. It's a spiritual disease that needs a spiritual solution, because she's tried everything else, you know. And with this grandson, though, what I had to do is work the spiritual principles of the traditions with this grandson. And the first thing that I did, Bob and I made a decision. We also took him out of public school in second grade because he was acting out in public school. And we put him into Catholic school. And the reason we did that is because I realized that my grandson needed a spiritual life, and he needed to have the stability of a spiritual school. And it's not about the religion, it's about the spirituality of the school. And so my grandson has been doing very well in school. And also another thing too that happened is that I'm not humiliated anymore about the loss of my husband's health or the loss of our jobs or the loss of our homes or cars or whatever. I'm not humiliated by that anymore because you gave me the stability and the transformation to know that this too will pass, and that we can get through anything one day at a time. And one day at a time for us, and then sometimes seems like a lifetime. But I know that just for today that we can get through anything and not get found out, right? Sure. But I got a lot of more stories to tell you, but it's too late and it's too long. And I just, again, want to say to you is that, you know, everything that's happened to us and to our families in alcoholism. My father is 92 years old, and I want to kind of leave with that. My father, and then, you know, I made amends to my father, and how I made amends to him by doing the steps. I just knew that, you know, I had to share that with my father. And my stepmother was alive at the time. She died of untreated Al-Anonism. She really did a number of years ago. But when I made amends to my father, I also gave him the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And years later, my stepmother told me, she goes, that was the best thing you ever gave him. And when he read your letter of amends, she said, you know, she said, it was really calm in our house. It was calm in our house for a long time. My father's still alive. He doesn't drink, you know, but he's still alive. And my father is suffering from the disease of alcoholism because he doesn't have a program. He doesn't have recovery. And my sister, my stepsister, she takes care of my father. She's kind of like the caregiver, and she takes care of his monies and his. He wants to die at home, and he won't go, you know, to a facility which he's paid, you know, thousands of dollars for, or whatever. You know, but that's his choice. I don't have to get into that turmoil and that conflict or whatever. I can just be of service, and that's what you taught me to do. I do it for you. When I go visit my father, I hate to see what he looks like. It breaks my heart. And I can sit there and I can, you know, my father will be watching television and he'll say something very racist about you know, the basketball players or the football players or the president or, you know, whatever. And I'm able to sit there and absolutely listen and learn. And what it teaches me again, because my grandson, when he visits my father acts better than he feels. And he doesn't pull that kind of behavior when my grandson is there. My grandson thinks he's a hero. And you know what? That's the memory that my grandson needs to have, I mean, from my alcoholic father. And so I'm going to close with this little saying, and I put it on my Al-Anon card. And this little saying is that it's a prayer that our sponsors gave to us. And it says, Dear God, help me to accept the seemingly bad as well as the good which is necessary for my life. I am so grateful that all of you are necessary for my life. Thank you very much.
Enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.